Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible.
Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, man. Anything's possible.
Rainy days. Jump shot fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. Especially when the season get hectic. I stay waiting on it like receiving a Nets pick. Nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth you might even hear a story on Gigi. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, John Corrales and Jay King. Locked on trying to get the 18th ring. So you can miss me with the blah blah. No more Geno time, we watching Jay do the Zaza. Melodies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Locked On Celtics podcast with the Rain and Jays. Today, it's me, your boy, Jay King from MassLive.com, here with Sam Jam Packard, the great. We've got Marcus Smart responding to Jimmy Butler's claims that Smart is not about that life. Obviously, Celtics are in a tied playoff series 2-2. One key issue, or one key part of Game 4 was all the switching the Celtics did to get Isaiah Thomas on Jimmy Butler. Not to get Isaiah Thomas on Jimmy Butler, but they went to that matchup and tried to give help and hoped that the rest of their defense would stay intact. Al Horford said they're going to do it again. We've got some reaction. And then we're going to go to the mailbag. The good old mailbag. We have asked listeners, you listeners, to send in questions with the hashtag RainingJays, no G. And we got some good ones. So we'll get to that soon. Let's start off with Marcus Smart's answer on whether he is about that life.
Are you about that life?
Like I said before, I ain't got to talk about what I am about. No, I just show you. I can show you better than I can tell you. So, I mean, like I said, it ain't hard to find it. You heard him. He said, I don't think Marcus Smart's about that life. I mean, last time I checked, if you're going to say somebody about that life, you should know, right? All right, so, but like I said, we're going to keep this Chicago Bulls versus Boston Celtics, not Marcus versus Jimmy.
Has anyone ever accused you of not being tough before?
Never.
So what was your reaction to that?
Sam, were you surprised that Marcus Smart kind of hinted he is about that life?
Not at all. As someone who's, you know, watched Marcus Smart play basketball and read any, you know, anything about Marcus Smart or how he grew up, not surprised that he was about that life. But I want to ask you a personal question. At what point today did you know you were going to ask Marcus Smart if he was about that life?
Well, it was the obvious question, right? Like, everyone wanted to talk to him about the Jimmy Butler thing. And, yeah, like, it's cool to get the reaction about what happened, but I thought that was the most obvious question. I didn't think like people were gonna make a big deal about it. But then I asked a question, and I got texts from my brother, a couple of my friends I haven't heard from for a while. people liked the about that life question. So I didn't think it was a big deal. I thought it was an obvious question. I thought it was a way to kind of make it a little funny. And I think he thought it was a little humorous too. And then he wanted to, it's funny when Marcus Smart is talking about tough guy stuff because he wants to send the message that he's a tough guy. He doesn't want to make too many headlines, but he like kind of dances around the fact that he wants to show everyone or wants to let everyone know that he is not intimidated at all. And like he was trying to say, you know, it's Jimmy, not Jimmy versus Marcus, it's the Celtics versus Bulls, yada, yada, yada. And then he's like, he knows where to find me. It ain't tough to find me. Marcus, man.
It's a delicate balance of not trying to fan the flames a little bit, but still having to show that, like, you don't fuck with me. And I think Marcus did it well, especially with that little laugh at the end.
The laugh was too funny. The laugh, like, ha-ha. It was great, man. That laugh was ideal. Let's move on to some basketball stuff.
Oh, hold on. I have another question.
Ooh, another about that life question.
Yeah, do you think this evolves into anything in Game 5? Anything more than some hard fouls and some pushing and shoving? Do you think this kind of tete-a-tete comes to a head on the basketball court?
No, I don't think so. Even the shove in Game 4, when Smart shoved Butler, I don't think that was because of any beef between the two of them. I think Smart was just irritated that he had got picked in the full court and just turned around and shoved someone. Like, it didn't look like Butler said anything before that. Smart has typically not responded on the court to things like this. Like, he and John Wall don't get along. He and, I mean, there are a lot of players who are probably irritated, yeah, by Marcus Smart's playing style, but he doesn't seem to be like a guy who talks a lot of junk on the court. When he gets upset, when he gets irritated, I think it's more because the things are going wrong for the Celtics or things are going badly for him. So I doubt this becomes an issue unless, like, things unravel for the Celtics, and then who knows? Anything could pop off. Jimmy Butler and Marcus Smart, both about that life, and we'll see. The Celtics were about that switching life in Game 4. They really switched a lot of ball screens, putting Isaiah Thomas on Jimmy Butler and thinking that the rest of their defense could help them survive that matchup. I think they do it because they think it's easier to rebound when you switch and don't have to rotate. And they were better on the glass in Game 4. They think it's easier to close out to shooters, and the Bulls only made 5 3-pointers. So really nobody, with the exception of Jimmy Butler, hurt the Celtics in Game 4. And that's kind of why they did it. So I don't know. I'm torn because on the one hand, it's like, okay, they did a good job. Their defense was actually like 15 points per 100 possession better with Thomas on the court in Game 4. But also, it's like Jimmy Butler could go wild one of these days if Isaiah Thomas keeps guarding him.
Yeah, no, I think it's kind of no matter what, you're kind of – the Bulls are going to work to find Isaiah Thomas. But it felt like the Celtics were kind of okay with Jimmy Butler getting his. I mean, with the amount of times he went to the line in Game 4, it was just like if Jimmy Butler is going to have to single-handedly will this team to victory by outscoring the Celtics because he was given no help. And I just don't see how – you can really avoid doing anything else if you are the Celtics. So there's a few occasions where they'd have like Isaiah kind of pop out and tag the guy with the ball, and then you'd have like kind of Marcus Smart scrambling back or Jay Crowder, whoever guarding Butler at the time. And I think it's important to kind of throw that wrinkle in so the Bulls don't get used to like a specific style of play, but just because to throw them a little bit off balance. But I don't think you can just like completely try and game plan Isaiah out of defense. He's going to get beat sometimes. That we saw last game, like Dwayne Wade just like completely destroyed him in the post once. But it's just like it's going to happen, and I don't think it's like the biggest deal in the world, especially if the Celtics keep scoring. It feels like in games 1 and 2, and I know this was a lot of product of Rondo being in the game, but the Bulls had a lot better ball movement and motion offense and were getting shots from everyone. It feels like without Rondo, their entire offense is basically just playing through Jimmy Butler, and they're not going to be like – it's not going to be as efficient. So it's just kind of – the game slows down. They're going to go Butler one-on-one. He's going to get his points, but as long as you can kind of keep scoring on the other end, I think the Celtics have a good formula for winning.
Yeah, and I think one of the issues, obviously, with switching Isaiah onto Butler is the foul trouble. Isaiah, there weren't a lot of times this season when he picked up a lot of fouls. Well, he had four in game four, and when you have to guard someone that physical, that good, and that much bigger than you are, then there's going to be times when you foul. And so that was an issue with the switching. Another issue, Jimmy Butler is a tough dude to guard. Obviously, Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder and Marcus Smart are better matchups for him. So, I don't know. That's a danger area for them. And I think they're lucky that the Bulls don't have more shooting than they do. And it would be harder to hide Isaiah, harder to make that work if the Bulls had more shooting. So, I mean, it's not like the Bulls have had these awesome offensive outings. Like, not at all. They've scored okay because they've offensive rebounded like monsters. But it's not like they're hitting a lot of threes or really hurting them in the half court at all. The Celtics half court defense has typically been pretty good. So we'll see. That's definitely something to watch in the future. The Bulls made a point of trying to pick on that throughout game four and will continue to do so as long as the Celtics keep with that strategy, which they did for a lot of game four. And Al Horford said they're going to keep doing it again. So we'll see. Let's go to the questions now. Actually, John Warden at jwarden317 asked about that switching. So shout out to him. Good question. We just answered it. We've got a few Jaylen Brown questions. People are still very interested, obviously, in the rookie, wondering what is going on, whether he's out of the rotation for the rest of the series. At Ivan Spitzfire asked 93 asked that. There was another question in here. I'm struggling to find it right now, but somebody else asked about Jaylen Brown. Thank you for the question. I'm sorry I can't find your name right now. There's a lot of questions. But I would anticipate Brown is, unless something happens, unless, you know, someone gets hurt or the Celtics start to struggle, I think Brown will remain out of the rotation for the rest of the series. And I think that's just because the Celtics are trying to get as much shooting as possible on the court. And even though he shot the ball pretty well, like, he's not as big a threat. You can really help off him if you're the other team. And like, he wasn't that good earlier in the series when he had a chance to solidify a spot in the rotation. So, Sam, are you with me? You'd be surprised if Jaylen gets in.
I wouldn't be surprised, because at this point, I feel like Brad Stevens could throw anything out there. But it's not likely to happen. I think it's less about his shooting and more he's still kind of feels lost out there on defense. Even though he has all the kind of athletic ability in the world, and you'd think he'd be this great person for switching, his communication and his decision-making just isn't there. And in the playoffs, you can't just be giving up easy baskets, and you can't be a defensive liability like that. Like Isaiah, for all his size, he's still pretty good at decision-making and when to go for steals and who to, and like picking up the right man in transition. It still feels like Jaylen is lost and Brad doesn't trust him on defense. And that's, I feel like, is the primary reason he's not out there. Just because it's hard to put a guy in there when you don't have faith that he's going to like just execute his job.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, that's a big part of it too. And the Celtics, obviously their rotation the last couple of games has worked, and they've gone away from Amir Johnson, who was a starter all season in a really good starting lineup. They've gone away from Jaylen Brown, who had a solid rookie season. And as Brad Stevens said today, sometimes it's just about matchups. And sometimes, you know, who would have thought coming into the series that Terry Rozier, who was picking up DMPCDs at the end of the regular season, would be such a big factor. But through four games, he's like a plus 30, I think. And he's just been great. So sometimes playoff series dictate different decisions, and I'd be surprised if we see either Amir or Brown the rest of the way. My man Rifesy at Rifesy, Daniel Reifler, who's an awesome Rain and Jays listener. Shout out to him. He's always sending us questions. Respect.
Mystery Machine Award winner.
Yes, yes, this is true. He wants to know, does Amir get back into the starting lineup when the Celtics get past the Bulls? Yes, he said when. I don't know. Maybe. obviously, it depends who they play. It depends on the matchups. If they play Washington, Washington has Markieff Morris at the four. So kind of a stretch guy. They have Marcin Gortat at the five. Definitely not a stretch guy. So maybe that's a better matchup for him. I don't know. This series, it was like the Bulls were kind of throttling the Celtics offense. And Stevens just decided, you know what? If Amir is not going to keep Robin Lopez off the glass anyway, and he wasn't, he was getting tortured down low, then might as well just throw in Gerald Green, which was a stunning move. But it's worked so far. And I do think, you know, Celtics in game four, they shot 27% from the three-point arc. They got a ton of good looks. If they get those same looks again from the same players, Thomas, Bradley, and Crowder combined to go 3-for-19. If they don't go 3-for-19 and they get those same opportunities, it is going to be bad, bad, bad for the Chicago Bulls.
Yeah, that's a big thing, is that in game three, they kind of had the good team performance where they shot a little bit better and kind of the points are spread around. In game four, they had the Isaiah dominance. But if they could ever put those two things together and have the Isaiah go off for a stretch of time and just have Avery Bradley and Jay Crowder hit open shots, they really should win the game by about 20, because they have a really good half-court offense, and their ball movement is on point enough to generate those open shots. As for the Amir question, I think it's more likely if they play the Hawks, just because I feel like Millsap is a little bit less stretchy than Morris, but I don't know. I think they're both not great matchups for Amir Johnson, and who knows what the state of Amir Johnson's ankles are, because he just played an 82-game season and then got basically ragdolled for two games by Robin Lopez. He did not look good, so I don't know what, like, if you would have faith in him to kind of, you know, box out Dwight Howard or even Marcin Gortat. It's just those, like, we may have seen the last of Amir, but who, like, I don't know, basketball matchups are kind of crazy, so you could imagine a scenario that Amir comes back and gives you like 10 and 12 in game one of the next series.
Amir, 5 3-pointers in game one of the next series. Sam Packard called it first. One thing people did not ask about, but I want to talk about, is Rajon Rondo, who was taking jumpers today at Bulls practice with his right injured hand. I'd be stunned at this rate if he doesn't play at some point in this series, just because it's Rondo. Like, I know he broke his right thumb 4 days ago or whatever it was, and that's his shooting thumb, passing thumb, his ball thumb.
his main ball thumb.
His main ball thumb, yeah. But he's Rondo, man. Like, if he can shoot, and apparently he can, at least try it, he's going to play in the series, right?
Oh, yeah. He's playing in game six. I feel like you can just book it right now. Like,
I'm not even convinced he won't play in game five.
That would be pretty wild. Like, days after being in like a heavy cast and a short sleeve suit on the bench. Although we have seen him get better in that time.
This is a guy who dislocated his elbow, left the court for like 7 minutes of game action, and came back on the court. That injury required months of recovery time, and he was back in literally minutes. So this is Rondo, man. Rondo.
But do you think he can still make an impact with a hurt hand? Because I think he does, because I know he had a number of assists in game one and two, but I thought his biggest impact was just on the defensive end and his knowledge of the Celtics plays and just like getting in there and mucking things up and getting his hands on the ball and just making it not easy for the Celtics to get in their action. So I think he could play with like a cast on and still be, or like some sort of weird thing, and still make an impact just based on defense alone. because he's so cerebral and has like such knowledge of like the plays in the game that I thought his bigger impact was on the defensive end.
Yeah, yeah, he definitely had a huge defensive impact, especially in game two. He was fantastic. So we'll see. I do think if his thumb is that bad, and it's probably going to be that bad if he does return soon, whether it's game five, game six, whenever. He's already a guy that you're game planning to sag off of in the first place. But if his hand is injured and his shooting is any worse than it already is, he's a guy you can really just abandon and probably help off of. Not that Isaiah Thomas's help is really going to be too destructive to anything else the Bulls want to do, but it's definitely, you know, something that you can game plan for, and it will help out the rest of their defense to have basically 4-on-5 for whatever game he comes back in. So we'll see. I do think it'll help. He's no Jerry and Grant or Michael Carter Williams, that's for goddamn sure. But yeah.
That's a good question that I think we got in there. So it's, what's the over-under on those guys, on their minutes? I think I just actually made up the question, but how many minutes do you think Grant and MCW will get combined in game five? I'm setting the over-under at 5.5.
I'll put it at 12.
Oh, taking the over.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe I should. Maybe I shouldn't. But they just don't have a lot of options. Like
they're gonna ride Isaiah Cannon for 44 minutes.
But okay, but Cannon had his best game in God knows how long, and still wasn't like a huge, huge, huge factor. He was good. He was solid. But like, if he falls off at all, if he's not good all of a sudden, then they don't have any other options. They got to go back.
They have go back. Denzel Valentine. They traded away Dougie McDermott and Taj Gibson for campaign. There's other pieces of crap you can run out on the court before you go back to Jerry and Grant and MCW.
Yeah, but sometimes, you know, it's about the size of the piece of crap or the
MCW did have like some decent moments just defending Isaiah because he is what, like 6'6", so maybe he gets more playing time, but he just felt like – I felt like then Isaiah just kind of tooled on him and then taunted him, and MCW got emotional, and it was all downhill for him.
Yeah, I mean, there hasn't been much uphill for him in this series, and certainly not for Jerry Grant, but he has been better defensively than Grant for sure. I thought Kanan was fine defensively, so we'll see. Rondo would be a big upgrade if he comes back reasonably healthy. Let's just put it that way. Sam Sheehan wants to know, if the Bulls win game five, what will be the cause? And bonus question, will we ever see a take that for data style post-gamer from Brad? If they win game five, it will be because Jimmy Butler went wild. I think we saw in game four, they are committed to playing Isaiah Cannon. They are committed to giving Jimmy Butler the ball as a point guard. They need him to play at least like 45 minutes. He is everything for this team right now. So if they win in game five, it is because the lineup spread the court for him and he just went bonkers. So obviously offensive rebounding could hurt. Mirotić, those guys can shoot better than they have the last couple of games, but if they win, it's because of Butler. Question.
Hold on. This is a dialogue here, Jay King. I get an answer too.
Go for it. I got a feeling you might say the same thing.
Well, no, I wouldn't interrupt you just to say the same thing. That'd be dumb on my part. I was going to say that if the Bulls win game five, it's because the Celtics just couldn't score or were continuing to miss all their shots. We saw that 6-minute stretch at the beginning of the third quarter in game four where their offense just was kind of awful and they weren't making anything. And that was the opportunity when the Bulls took to kind of creep back into the game. Because I think Jimmy Butler is going to get his points. But as long as the Celtics keep scoring, I don't really think the Bulls have much of a chance. But if the Celtics have one of those games where they just don't make outside shots. Avery Bradley has a bad game. Crowder has a bad game. For some reason, Al Horford's not aggressive. And on top of that, Isaiah doesn't dominate. Then I can see the Bulls kind of hanging around. But it really would have to be because
hanging
the Celtics...
Hanging around. I had to get that Rounders reference in there. All right, this is a good one from my man Alex Kungu. At Kungu underscore NBA. Top five players in this series who you think are about that life.
Marcus Smart.
Okay, so who's number one, Smart or Butler? Or Crowder? I think it's between Smart or Butler.
Yeah, no. I think Marcus Smart, just for that one story where he was like got in a fight and ran to get his dad's gun or something and had to be stopped before he shot someone up, that just screams about that life to me.
I mean, that's pretty about that life. But Butler has an incredible story. He was homeless at like his mom left the family at like age 12 or 13, right? And he had to be like the father for his siblings at that young an age, and they were homeless. So Butler is very much about that life. It's incredible that either of those guys have gotten to where they are. So shout out to them for really persevering through tough things. They are both 1 and 1A, however you want to put it, in being about that life. Big drop off after that. Who you got as number three?
I'm gonna go with Terry Rozier.
Rozier.
He had a pretty crazy upbringing too, with some wild stuff in his past. And plus, I'm pretty sure he's like low key a member of the Bloods. So I'm gonna go with Terry Rozier about that life.
We're going to say that is
pure speculation on my part. Pure speculation.
Definitely some over speculative stuff right there.
But shout out to the GMB boys of Cleveland, because that's who's all over his Snapchat.
Are we talking about that life, like who you'd want in a fight on a basketball court, or like just tough upbringing, stuff like that? Because if we're going fight on a basketball court, I'm definitely going with Jay Crowder. I think number three behind those guys, Jay Crowder. I think Robin Lopez is a wild card, man. Robin Lopez, I don't know. Those Lopez twins are weird cats, but they're tough cats, especially Robin. Robin's a tough dude.
I really loved it when Robin Lopez just tried to – when he untied Jay Crowder's shoe on that little scuffle. That was hilarious. That's just like Jay Crowder threw his shoe away, so Robin Lopez did the only way that he could defend it. And it was – he's got a little bit of that crazy vibe in him. You never want to go up against a fight against the craziest guy in the room because you don't know what they're capable of. So I'm with you on that one.
Yeah. So Lopez is a real wild card. I still wouldn't put him in the top five. Rondo, super tough, obviously. There's a lot of tough guys in this series. But I've definitely got Crowder at three. Who else is about that life?
It's a good question. I'm trying to think the Bulls roster, not Zipser. I don't know enough about the Bulls. Like Bobby Portis doesn't really feel like he fits.
Bobby Portis is an intense, wild dude. Bobby Portis might be about that life. He might be four on this list. Bobby Portis is another wild card.
Yeah, well, you apparently know his whole story. I'm going to have to trust you on that one. And then for the Celtics, not Kelly Olynyk, not Jonas. The big dog's not really fighting. Big Al's not fighting. Avery Bradley's not fighting. I don't know who else you're going to throw in that scrum.
Marcus versus all, man. Marcus
will take on all comers.
Well, that's been the biggest problem for the Celtics this series, right? Is that they don't have enough guys that are about that life. Like they're a tough group, but they don't have enough physicality in the front court. They need another front court guy who is about that life. Ante Zizic might be about that life.
Yabu, the dancing bear, is about that life, let me tell you.
All right, we have talked enough about that life to last us a life.
I don't even know what that life is anymore.
Yeah, we've talked about that life so much, we're not even sure what that life is. Someone just asked, at Jeffinitely, Jimmy Butler, IT, and Gerald Green would be a pretty legit big three, am I right? Yes, it would. Absolutely. I'm fully on anything with Gerald Green in it right now. Gerald Green is hot right now. Gerald Green is hot in the streets. Gerald Green, I might even put him about that life just because it's just been that type of series, man. This is a Gerald Green type of series. I didn't think he'd be a starter. I definitely didn't think he would score 18 points in a game. But Gerald Green coming up big. Rich A. Jensen is worried about game 5 because when the C's talk tough, they rarely play tough. He wants to see them learn how to play well as favorites. Thoughts? Sam, you go first.
I think the concern is legitimate. I mean, how many times have we talked about like this Celtics team underperforming in kind of the big games? I'm thinking specifically of the Cleveland game, where there's a lot of talk about them taking the one seed, and they just kind of came out there and didn't have that intensity and didn't really bring it. You would hope that the Celtics would have learned their lessons in the first two games and realized kind of what level they have to play at, because it's the playoffs and because like this is game 5. It's an incredibly important game in this series. So I'm a little bit less concerned, but definitely there's that thought in the back of my head of like, well, this is the Celtics. Like they're pretty good at being complacent. And so I don't think it would be enough to cost them an entire game, but I wouldn't be surprised if they like came out a little bit flat just to start the first quarter. But I don't know. It's not the biggest concern, but it's lingering there, I would say.
Yeah, they have come out weirdly flat in some games. Like you said, the Cleveland game, and then the funeral game when there was all that hype for the Celtics-Wizards. Random game.
The game after the Cleveland game against the Hawks, where they like you think they would bounce back, and then they just got their ass kicked by the Hawks.
Yeah, but I don't know. It just feels to me like everything in this series has switched. And the Bulls, when the Celtics are bombing threes like they have been and stretching the court with all perimeter shooters and giving space for Horford to roll and Thomas to do his thing and all of that, there's just not much the Bulls can do to limit the Celtics from getting pretty clean looks. And the Bulls aren't about that clean look life. Like that is a team that kind of has to win grimy. And as long as the Celtics keep this from being a grimy series, I think they're the real favorite. So I don't think there's much the Bulls can do. Obviously Cannon helped in game 4, but there's just not much they can do from a personnel basis that can help them deal with everything the Celtics can do offensively. And like you said, as long as the Celtics are making shots and get pretty good games from their better players, then I think they should be fine. When they're at their best, they're certainly a better team. So we'll see. At the same time, these Celtics, anything can happen with these Celtics. And even when they were up 20 in game 4, like they, a quarter later, they were down 2, and they needed Isaiah Thomas to save them. So I don't think anyone should be fully comfortable, but the Celtics certainly have taken control of this series, is what it feels like to me, and they've kind of figured out how to react to the Bulls' toughness, which is by making it less of a factor by just turning it into a skill series. And once they turn it into a skill series, it's been downhill for the Bulls. Obviously, Rajon Rondo being out has been a big part of that. We're getting pretty long here, so I don't think we're going to answer any other questions. Thank you to everyone who did answer questions. Anybody who wants to get questions for any podcast. Actually, we got one more. There was one more that I wanted to talk. And this is a pretty good one from Connor Sharp at Connor T. Sharp. Would you rather have 2011-12 Rondo or 2016-17 Isaiah Thomas?
I think it's easy for me. I think you got to go with Isaiah, because with Rondo, he was phenomenal, but he still had to have the kind of the pieces around him to be the most effective. He was really great at playmaking, and then finding the KG and Pierce in their spots where they can get points. But you still needed those other players. It feels like with IT, I mean, yeah, he benefits from kind of being surrounded by shooters and having Al Horford out there, but he can put you on his back in a way that Rondo could only do on national TV or in the playoffs.
Yeah, that's a tough question for me, because both of them are such unique players. Like, Isaiah Thomas is an offensive stud, like just absolute, carries an offense by himself, one of the most efficient high-volume scorers, really, that the league has ever seen this season. He had an incredible season with his efficiency at his usage rate, just really close to being unrivaled. And then Rondo just did everything else. And he was great. When the playoffs came, he was spinning triple doubles. They're both competitive as hell, but they kind of do it in different ways. Like, Isaiah is just fearless, relentless, never stops scoring the basketball. When the Celtics are on the ropes, he seems to be at his best. Rondo's kind of the same way, but he's also like that gritty defender that would kind of disrupt everything the other team did at that end. That's a close. Rondo at his best was awesome. I think Isaiah is better. I'd rather have Isaiah Thomas. So Isaiah's just had a fantastic year, and he's far more consistent than Rondo ever was. So Isaiah gets my vote for sure. Everybody else, thank you for asking questions. We appreciate it. Thank you for listening. This is the Locked On Celtics podcast. If you don't subscribe to us, first of all, what are you thinking? Second of all, you can do it on iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever else. Just search for Locked On Celtics. Give us a 5-star rating. Subscribe to us. All of that. Before we go, the little guy 4 wants to know, are you about that life, Jay? And I'm going to leave it on this note.
Hell no!
Motherfucking yeah. No, I'm really not about that life. I'm not at all about that life.
I am Sam Packard, and I am not about that life.
Actually, I am so not about that life that I'll give this quick story. I was once in a prep school game. I did 1 year of prep school, and I'm in a prep school game, and this kid was a monster. I think he went to Manhattan, a D1 player, like 6'8", 6'9", and he came around a screen and gave me a brutal nut jab, and I was like, all right, I didn't think he did it on purpose. Next time I set a screen, boom, same thing. And instead of like going at this kid, I was like, you know what? He's like 6'9", 230, like probably not the best idea. I just screamed at the ref. And it was like a dead silent gym. There was nobody in the gym. And I looked at the ref. I said, he's punching me in my fucking nuts. And so that's the life I was about. My parents were a little shameful. They were in the crowd and everyone could hear it. But yeah, that's the type of life I'm about.
Using your words to get your way. And then now you have a career out of it. So I think you are in the long run, Jay King, you might be about that life.
I'm not so convinced. We'll end it there though. Thank you for listening to the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.